Welcome to the People and Projects Podcast, where you'll find interviews and insights to help you deliver projects and lead teams. You can find us on the web at peopleandprojectspodcast.com.
Hi, this is Andy Kaufman, President of the Institute for Leadership Excellence Development Corporate. Thank you for joining us for this edition of the People and Projects Podcast. I'm recording this on the road this week. I'm delivering a keynote on leadership at a Project Management Institute Professional Development Day this afternoon. I gotta tell you, I've got leadership on my mind today. So let me ask you this. Think of one of the best leaders you've ever had the privilege of working with. What was it about that person that made them such an effective leader? Though the details of your answer could be different from what maybe I would say or others would say, chances are we would all agree that the best leaders that came to mind for us shared one thing in common: credibility. You know, credibility is fundamental to being a leader. In this cast, I'm excited to share the first of two episodes from a conversation with Jim Kouzes. Jim, along with his co-author Barry Posner, are some of the foremost researchers and voices on leadership, including works such as their best-selling book, The Leadership Challenge. In these next two episodes, I talk with Jim about their newly updated book, Credibility: How Leaders Gain It and Lose It, Why People Demand It. And a quick note to our premium subscribers, your additional premium episode will be available with the second of these two episodes. Okay, let's learn about credibility from Jim Kouzes.
We're joined today by one of the world's most trusted and influential scholars on leadership, Jim Kouzes. Jim is the Dean's Executive Fellow of Leadership at Santa Clara University's Levy School of Business. Jim and his co-author Barry Posner have undeniably made an enormous impact with their research and writings on leadership. Their book, The Leadership Challenge, has sold over 2 million copies and has been translated into at least 12 languages. Jim has served as president, then CEO and chairman of the Tom Peters Company. And not only is Jim a highly regarded leadership scholar, experienced executive, and award-winning speaker, the Wall Street Journal named him one of the 12 best executive educators in the United States. Today, we're talking with Jim about the newly released edition of Credibility: How Leaders Gain It and Lose It, Why People Demand It. Jim, thank you for joining us for the People and Projects Podcast.
My pleasure, Andy. Thank you very much for this opportunity to be with you today.
You know, I absolutely loved reading Credibility, Jim. It was really difficult to put down, and just like normal, the way that you and Barry write, clear and just full of stories and cases. So thank you for updating this and delivering a great leadership guide for us all.
Well, thank you. It's just been a delight to work on, and I hope very timely.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, in my experience is when it comes to credibility, we often recognize it when we see it, maybe in a boss or some national leader. We recognize it when we see it, but we can struggle to actually define it. Well, that's me, but your research brought some clarity to what it looks like and it behaves like. So what's a practical way to describe credibility?
Well, when we ask people that very question, what does credibility mean to you? If it walked into the room, what would it look like? Mm-hmm. And people say very similar things, and they have said them consistently over the over 30 years we've been doing this. Things like, well, they practice what they preach. They put their money where their mouth is. When someone is credible, he or she walks the talk. So this common phrase includes two key elements. We could say it really is all summarized as do what you say you will do, D-W-Y-S-Y-W-D for short. Yep. And that means two basic things. The say and the do part are the key elements to that. You got to have something clear to communicate values, beliefs, vision, purpose and meaning, and then you have to do it. You have to put it into practice.
You know, there's a number of things I think make this book stand out, but, you know, from normal leadership books, but not the least of which is you take the angle of the follower or the constituent. Why is that perspective so important, Jim?
Well, many of the books, including ours, The Leadership Challenge, for example, takes the perspective of the leader and talks about what leaders do to get extraordinary things done. It's the leader does this, the leader does that. And that's an important perspective to take, and all leaders need to understand the kinds of behaviors that will enact their ability to get extraordinary things done. But it's also important to remember that leadership is a relationship. It's a relationship between those who would willingly follow and those who aspire to lead. And you have to look at the relationship between the two. And so we wanted to ask constituents, what do you look for in admiring a leader, someone whose direction you would willingly follow?
Yeah, I thought that was a really fresh perspective. I think people will really relate to that because ultimately, even if we are a boss, we have a boss, right? We're a follower, and so we can relate to that, huh?
Yeah, all of us are leaders and followers. There are very few who are in any position to claim that they are the only one in the relationship.
Absolutely. Yeah, no doubt. And I find it interesting, based on your research, since this was done over the years, that the top characteristics that constituents admire in their leaders has really stayed the same. And actually, I appreciate the table that said even across countries and regions, though the numbers may change a little bit, these top four really stand clear. So what are those top characteristics, and how do they factor into a leader's credibility?
Yeah, it is kind of amazing, Andy, that these things have been so consistent over time. That perhaps is as surprising as anything we found, that there's anything consistent in this very turbulent time we're going through. But the top four, in order of importance to people, are for leaders, are honest. People want a leader who's honest, trustworthy, is truthful, has integrity. They want a leader who's forward-looking, has a vision of the future, has a positive outlook on the future, someone who is competent, third quality, someone who knows what they're doing, is capable of getting things done, has expertise, and lastly, inspiring, somebody who's dynamic, energetic, and upbeat. So honest, forward-looking, competent, and inspiring are the top four.
I thought it was kind of interesting because, you know, there's often debate of does the leader have to be charismatic or not, but inspiring made me think, well, that does seem like people are looking for that, right? So is there a difference between charismatic and inspiring, would you say?
Well, I think the two are used synonymously, but often when people think charismatic, they think of someone who's this, gifted person who has this aura about them, almost a mythical figure. And when you actually break it down behaviorally, as researchers have done, it doesn't look so mythical. Dynamic and inspiring are things we look for in leaders because if you think about the opposite of that, particularly in tough times, you want a leader who's downbeat, not optimistic about the future, is a pessimist, is negative, you know, has no energy or enthusiasm for the job they're doing. You know, obviously, we don't, especially in tough times. So the inspiring, if you think about the other qualities of being honest and competent and being forward-looking, those are in some ways the entry ticket that gets you to have people who will want to follow you, but they're not going to follow you, particularly in tough times, unless you also demonstrate your enthusiasm and energy for the vision and the values for which you stand. And so it's the added almost booster rocket that gives people that sense of, I really want to follow this person because I think they can see us through the tough times we're going to have to go through, and they make me feel excited and energetic. That enthusiasm is infectious.
Yeah, I think so. And your chapter on sustaining hope, I thought, really captured a lot of that this sense of it will get better. And as best I could tell, some people have done that for me, weren't necessarily cheerleaders, but there was something about that credibility or that the foundation or their vision that could have come off as charisma, I suppose, but it was still hope.
Yeah, and that sense of keeping hope alive in other people is so vital. In adverse times, that sense that the leader continues to have a positive outlook on the future, and that gives us then the sense that, well, we too can be optimistic about it.
Right. Yeah. You know, a typical management leadership training will say that, you know what, leadership is not a popularity contest, you know, and it stood out, your quote from Erwin Fetterman, the venture capitalist and former CFO and CEO. The quote from the book is that he contends that all things being equal, at least, we'll work harder and more effectively for people we like, and we like them in direct proportion to how they make us feel. So tell us a little bit more about this like and this popularity contest and how it affects credibility, but maybe where we cross the line and it hurts our credibility.
You know, I love that comment from Irwin. He is such an outstanding leader. Was former chief financial officer of a company, became chief executive officer, then a venture capitalist, and for years he has been one of our role models. And I particularly like that phrase, mm-hmm. you know, that all things being equal, we work harder and more effectively for people we like.
Yeah.
And we will like them in direct proportion to how they make us feel. It really underscores the importance of the relationship and how people relate to that leader and how whether that leader makes them feel energized, engaged, involved, interested, makes them feel like they can do more than they even thought, or whether that person has the opposite impact. You know, one of the things that I love to say to people is I often hear the phrase, and you've probably heard it too, Annie, I don't care if they like me, I just want them to respect me.
Yeah, right.
You know, as if this is a binary question. I can have one or the other.
Exactly.
You know, the notion that people don't care if they are not liked is a clear indication that they are giving us an excuse for them being abusive in their behavior.
Right, yeah.
You know, that they aren't considerate of other people's points of view. Yes, it's not a popularity contest, meaning I'm not taking a vote on whether we're going to be consistent with their values or not consistent with their values, whether we're headed in a particular direction or not. But at the same time, I'm going to behave towards other people in such a way that they will look at me as someone who has their best interests at heart, okay. who in fact likes them. One of the things, and this is a real hot button for me, I say to people, listen, who are these people that you don't care don't like you?
Yeah.
Like, is it your kids or your spouse or is it your boss?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Really, let's get real here. We use these phrases in leadership. We toss out these phrases
right.
and really aren't thoughtful about what we're saying.
Yeah.
In fact, if you look at our research or any research, when someone looks at the question of whether someone likes a manager or not, likes you know, the person to whom you report, your boss or not, you will find consistently all the research when people answer positively to the question of whether they like someone or not, and they say they do like them, they are higher performers. So the research clearly supports Irwin's point yeah. of view on this question.
You know, I remember talking to a friend, and clearly this is not a parenting podcast, right? But he goes, you know what, my job is not to be their friend. But just the way he said it, made it, and you know, and there's elements of truth to that, but the way you said it, almost like I'm going to go out of my way as I kind of work with trying to develop this issue with my child. And I think sometimes when I hear people say it's not a popularity contest, just like you said, it's almost like an excuse to do something that maybe they shouldn't be doing. And yet, I suppose you and I both probably worked with people that go out of their way almost too much trying to be liked.
Well, you know, just to go back to the comment you made, I'm not supposed to be their friend. In fact, at work, if you look at the research by Rath and others from Gallup, you will see that managers, you know, the person to whom you report, if that person is considered a friend, you're 2.5 times more likely to be engaged in your work. So the data yeah. just doesn't support that kind of comment.
Yeah.
And again, it offers people an excuse for bad behavior, both yeah. towards people who work for you and towards your kids.
Yeah, yeah.
Can you cross the line? I think you can. You cross the line in this sense. If you start to play favorites, if you start to treat certain people more generously than you would treat other people, if you start yeah. to become indecisive as a leader because, I've got to stop and take a vote to see how I should make a decision on this particular issue because I'm concerned that they might not like the decision that I make. And again, we have to make a distinction between not liking a decision and not liking a person. You know, we yeah. were talking about parenting earlier,
and
you know, we've all made decisions that our kids may not like. That doesn't mean they don't yeah. like us. As leaders, it's the same story. We may have to make decisions that people do not like, but overall, they can continue to like us because, on balance, we do things that are much more in line with what's in the best interest of others than in our own interests.
Yeah, I really like your teaching on this, Jim. I think people need to hear it, that all things being equal, right?
Mm-hmm.
that you know, it's okay to be liked, and it's It's a worthwhile thinking through what are even the dimensions of that so that we can do it well. But I appreciate your insight on that. You know, you offer up six disciplines for earning and sustaining credibility in book, and you talk about the importance of credo, competencies, and confidence, and they combine to form our character. So what are those three components, and how do they impact our credibility?
Well, one of the first disciplines we talk about is you have to discover yourself. You have to take an inward journey and make some decisions about your values and beliefs, your credo. You have to look at your competence, your ability to execute on what you say you believe in. And then the combination of those two, your clarity about what you stand for and believe in, and your sense that you have the ability, the skills and ability to execute on those values and beliefs, that vision and direction in which you're taking the organization, that will bring you then the confidence to execute. And you then also have to ask yourself the question, do I have the competence to execute in the tough and challenging situations that I face? Because it's one thing to be able to do these in good times, another to be able to do them in challenging and adverse circumstances. Feeling confident that I can execute even in challenging situations then just increases that ability to get extraordinary things done and that ability to sustain and earn and sustain credibility over time. And we say that those three things, credo, competence, and confidence, add up to the content of our character.
Yeah, I really like the teaching you have in the book on that. And you even recommend, if I understood you right as I read it, that people should not only explore and identify these, but have a dialogue with people. In fact, you had even some research in there that people want to have this dialogue, but we don't have them. But check this out. What would you say to the person that's concerned that maybe their core beliefs aren't necessarily politically correct? You know, so I'll extend one of my own. One of my core beliefs is that people are made in the image of God. So everyone matters. Everyone has these enormous value, regardless of position or gender, race, social status, whatever. And seeing people through those lenses, Jim, it's really served me well. But even as I say that, I'd have to think that someone listening is going to be concerned that if they said that to their team in a corporate setting, that they would risk being, you know, insensitive or bringing up something religious. So what do you have to say, or what advice do you have for someone that might be concerned about sharing their core beliefs?
You raise the important question of fit, Andy, and I think this is a place where we all have to make sure that we feel like our personal values and the organization's values are aligned. At Chick-fil-A, for example, they are clearly and explicitly organized around a set of Christian beliefs. Right. And, for example, they aren't open on Sundays.
Right.
And that's a business practice that many other fast food companies would not align themselves with, but Chick-fil-A believes so strongly that they do. Now, Chick-fil-A may not be the kind of organization that's right for everyone. It's an exceptional company. It does exceptional things, and is an organization led by people with high credibility and high integrity. But that organization may not be the best for everyone. So what we need to do in ourselves as individual contributors as well as leaders is to make sure that there is a good fit between what we believe and what the organization believes. We find in our research, and is as you were mentioning, that only when there is that kind of alignment do we get the highest level of personal commitment. When I see that my values and the organization's values are aligned. But the first step in that process is clarifying my own values. It's a question, what you raise is a question of fit and shared value.
Although I wonder, Jim, I mean, I think I could have that same core value. And I was at a bank recently and they said, you know what our mission is? Make rich people richer.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was kind of funny how he said it. And he said it in a very almost like condescending, like, I'm sick of making rich people richer. But I think if they maybe dug in, based on the teaching you have there, well, are there other values that we have here, and can we find ways to align it? But back to my original point, I still think I could have this is how I look at people, and work at a place that maybe has some different elements of it, but still be effective in my role as a leader.
Yeah, well, I think going back to what you were talking about earlier, if I take that particular teaching that everyone has enormous value regardless of position and gender and race and social status, etc. I might view that personally as a particular attached to a particular religion, but there are other people who share that value who might share it secularly or might share it because they're Confucian or Buddhist or because Muslim or Hindu, but they share the same value. So we have to be careful that we don't attach it to, you know, you have to have the same faith as I do in order to for me to be able to work with you. But if it's, if we're focused then on the values, let's look at the value itself and not attach it to a particular ideology or religious or political set of beliefs.
Well, don't miss the next cast where Jim and I talk about what to do when you're given an assignment that's over your head. How does that impact credibility? And what about when you have to execute against a decision you don't agree with? Does that mean your credibility is on the line? Jim shares his expert coaching with those questions and more, so don't miss it. Well, thank you for joining me for this episode of the People Projects Podcast. Have a great week.